Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Welcome to the Viking Age podcast, the official podcast of thevikingage.com. My name is Chris Shad. I am a writer for the Viking Age, Zone Coverage, Bring Me the News, and the Brookings Register. We do this every Monday with a late week episode right here on the Viking Age YouTube channel. We're also in podcast form on Apple and Spotify the very next day, but however you consume us, make sure you rate, comment, like, and subscribe so you never miss a new episode and we can spread the word to the masses. Today's guest, you see him on the right on the YouTube channel. He writes for the Wide Left Substack, wideleft.football.com. Well, not .com. That's weird. It's just .football, which is actually awesome, by the way. But I don't know. It was probably force of habit. Anyway, his name is Arif Hassan. Arif, welcome back to the show, man.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, as soon as I was like trying to register the website, and I think .com wasn't available, and then they gave me a couple of suggestions, and I was like, I wonder if I could just like throw in. And so I threw in .sports, and I was like, that's kind of boring. And so I just put in the word football to see if it was available, and that is a URL that you can have. So I was like, yeah, 100. Of course, I'm going to get that. So that's worked out pretty well for me. I very much enjoyed having it.
Yeah, especially when people are like, I wonder what this guy talks about. .football, that might be a clue. I don't know. But let's get right into it, because the Minnesota Vikings are set to report on Sunday. At least the rookies are. Veterans are going to report on July 25th. So I'm just going to ask you right out of the blue, what is your most interesting storyline for the Minnesota Vikings heading into training camp?
Gosh, I mean, I think the one that's going to capture the most attention is, it's not a hot take. I think it's going to be JJ McCarthy. How's he looking? Right? Like, that one is the most fascinating one to follow. It's going to consume a lot of my attention. But in terms of like trying to find a storyline that's a unique angle or completely kind of out of the normal kind of lanes that we use to cover the team, it's hard to avoid the rookie quarterback. Obviously, you know, if Kyrie Jackson was still with us, I mean, his story is phenomenal. I would have loved, you know, following it as it continued. And that's probably the one I would have picked. But I think other than that, you know, seventh round pick Levi Drake Rodriguez also has a really great story. Texas A&M Commerce. Really interesting how he got into football. I don't know enough about it to speak on it with authority, but what I have heard is enough to kind of capture my attention. And it's an area where, you know, there's not a ton of talent ahead of him, right? You know, whoever is starting next to Harrison Phillips, I don't think we have got a ton of confidence in that guy. And it could be the case that if, you know, Levi Drake Rodriguez has a good enough camp, you know, that could be him, right? Or he could be in the rotation with Jaquelin Roy or whatever, right? So There are some other interesting storylines that we haven't talked a lot about that I want to learn more about before I talk about them. But honestly, I mean, how's JJ looking, right?
Yeah, I think that's what everybody, it's like 10 years ago. We'll go back 10 years a little bit later in the podcast, but it's very similar to a training camp that you and I covered back in 2014, where everybody wanted to know how Teddy Bridgewater looked. It was his first season. He was behind Matt Castle on the depth chart, but I mean, nobody really kind of paid attention to Matt Castle because they just figured he'd be gone in two or three games. But Sam Darnold has kind of, I don't know, he's got a little bit bigger pull because everybody's hearing about the Dante Culpepper plan. Everybody wants to know, you know, can the Vikings fix Sam Darnold? I think that's maybe not just as interested as J.J. McCarthy, but I do think that's there. I guess when it comes to McCarthy, we'll start there. What do you want to see from J.J. during this training camp? Even if he doesn't get the starting job, how can he make it a success?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like you said, there's a really good chance he's just not going to have the starting job, right? I mean, the Vikings have tabbed Sam Darnold and have given him all of the first team reps. I mean, it seems like that's pretty much set in stone. But, you know, the things that you'd want to see from him where you would say, you know, that's a pretty good camp. I think it's less about like interceptions or anything like that. He's going to actually throw some. I'd feel actually more concerned if he didn't throw a single pick in camp and be like, well, why aren't you taking chances? Why aren't you learning kind of what things you can and can't get away with? But really, I want to see if, you know, because the Vikings are kind of reworking or remapping the way his footwork marries with his release. And, you know, that's a whole process. It's one reason why you wouldn't want to throw him out there too soon. That can sometimes slow down your process, you know, as you're kind of looking across the field, trying to figure out who to throw to. It can actually slow down the physical throw itself. So it'll lead to a longer release time until you tighten everything back up together. And so for a good camp, it would be getting rid of the ball quickly, identifying an open receiver, getting that ball to the open receiver, peppering all levels of the field. If he's only throwing short, like if he's getting rid of the ball quickly and the ball comes out with a good amount of zip, but he's only throwing short, you know, that to me suggests that there's still stuff that he's got to work on to make sure that he's got enough confidence to throw some of these deep balls that, you know, if we're going to have Justin Jefferson on the roster, you got to use him, right? So I think it's making sure that he uses all available grass on the field when he's throwing the ball, that he gets rid of the ball quickly, that he's confident in his throws. It very much sounds like, based off of the way people have been talking about his spring practices, that there's a lot of zip on the ball, that there's a ton of throw power, essentially. And I think that that's nice, but having all of that together is going to be a critical part for, you know, our evaluation to see kind of if he's been making the kind of progress that the Vikings have indicated he needs to make.
Yeah, and all the earlier reviews have been good. I mean, TJ Hockenson was on the Bustin' with the Boys podcast this week raving about him. Adam Thielen gave him a glowing review when he went to work out with him. There are other people who have worked out with JJ McCarthy over the summer. I've been trying to shy away from when will JJ McCarthy start, because nobody really knows. But a question I have been asking is, what makes you think the Vikings looked at JJ McCarthy and decided that he was their guy outside of, you know, Drake May being selected with a third overall pick or the guys in front of him? You know, what was it about JJ McCarthy that you think attracted the Vikings?
I think a lot of it has to do, like, obviously he probably killed it on the whiteboard, right? Obviously, you know, when they put him through the paces in all of the private workouts that they had with quarterbacks this offseason, that he was impressive. Clearly, they liked the arm strength and all that. But I think the thing that may have kind of put him at the top of the radar, so to speak, might have just been kind of this, I'm not going to call it off the field stuff because it manifests on the field, but it might have just been this kind of attitude and approach that he has to football. He seems to have a natural gift for leadership. And the way that he seems kind of driven to succeed. You know, I think that a lot of these high level quarterbacks, you know, there's a ton of people with a lot of talent, and I don't just mean physical talent, but like, you know, mental acuity, really quick processing, things like that. They've got a good work ethic, but when you look at the top players, they're really kind of maniacal, right, about being great at football, right? And, you know, maybe that's not healthy, but if you're an organization, you're looking for a guy that's going to do as much as possible in order to win. And so when you're looking at a player like Drake May, who's got a pretty good talent for reading the field, right? Who's got a great arm, who's got really good athleticism. And you're looking at someone like JJ McCarthy, like, yeah, they might have preferred Drake May. In fact, I believe that they probably did. But one of the things that, you know, down the line might separate the two might be that McCarthy has had this unerring drive since he was like 5 or 6 to be like astonishingly good. And that he's had these setbacks and that he's bounced back from these setbacks, right? He had a really devastating loss, you know, 2 years ago in the college football playoff, and he comes back and he wins the whole thing, right? So I think that all of these probably played a pretty big role, but I imagine that that element, you know, his personality, right? That element probably, you know, early on in the process allowed them to put a star next to his name or however they organized their scouting board.
They do the little, what is it, the cursive star or whatever, where you go up, down or whatever, like
right,
that.
Right, yeah,
or,
you don't look up your page. Yeah.
little highlighter. I like to go with the highlighter in my fantasy football draft. Like, you know, a lot of people use the chart or the, you know, ADP or whatever. Give me the old piece of paper and the little highlighter there and kind of mark them off that way. You know, it is funny when we talk about JJ McCarthy and his upbringing, because when I had Matthew Coller on the show, he also mentioned that JJ McCarthy decided he wanted to be a football player when he was in fifth grade. And when I was watching receiver and seeing Amon-Ra St. Brown and his brothers and John Brown with his like intense, you know, LeVar Ball like workout plan to get him to the NFL, you know, Adam and I kind of said on Monday, we're like, man, did those kids even have a childhood? But that's almost what you need to do now. You need to decide really early, like, I'm going to the NFL, because there's so much work that goes into it. And you know, there are players who get to the NFL and they flame out immediately. But I mean, even just listening to McCarthy talk, like, you know, that guy seems like he's driven and he understands the role that he's inheriting at 21 years old, which is also another factor in this process, I think.
Yeah, it was a pretty old quarterback class, you know, as we kind of look through all these prospects, people like, you know, Jaden Daniels, I think was 24, Drake May is older, right? And you go down the list, you're taking a look at guys that, you know, were, you know, Bo Nix is like 24, 25. And you go down the list and you take a look, Michael Penix older, right? You take a look at the guys that are expected to go the second, third, fourth rounds, they're older. Right. It's an unusually old quarterback class. And it's an unusually old draft class in general, just because of, you know, the way the transfer portal has worked and, you know, the COVID-19, you know, exclusions and stuff like that. So that's just going to happen. But when you've got, you know, somebody who's a little bit younger, you've got kind of more of a chance to see kind of what that development curve is going to look like. If you compare somebody with similar traits, one of them is 21, one of them is 24, really good chance that 21-year-old is going to mature into having a greater capacity for some of the traits that you like, right? You know, your arm tends to get a little bit stronger as you get older, up until I think like 26. You tend to run a little bit faster as you get older, up until like you're 28, right? You know, you gain, you know, muscle mass, you get stronger up until you're about like 29. So all of these are elements where there's a lot more potential. The ceiling is a little bit higher for a similarly graded prospect at a different age. Plus, of course, there's like the mental flexibility, right? You know, your ability to pick up languages, you know, decreases as you get older, not because you're not smart, but because, you know, the elasticity of your brain to pick up new concepts is just not quite there. So having a 21-year-old in the draft available to you, that's going to be a big part of it. And then, of course, you know, the fact that this is something that he's been devoted to for so long, even as a 21-year-old, the experience that he's had attempting to learn really high-level football concepts is, I think, much, much greater than a lot of his peers. And like you said, you know, in order to get to that level, sometimes, you know, you have to, you know, commit very early on, like fifth, sixth grade, like you mentioned. But I think that kind of that early commitment from McCarthy, even in that environment, still stands out within that context. And so I think that those are all of the things that really appealed. And I think that the reason that the Vikings might have preferred McCarthy over a Penix or a Nix or even, you know, Jaden Daniels potentially, might have been, you know, the combination of maturity for his age and then also his age. So I think that all of those things are kind of a big part of this conversation.
And it's interesting when you talk about that compared to Sam Darnold, because I remember one of the selling points that he had coming into that 2018 draft was that he was so young. I think he came out as a redshirt sophomore out of USC. I looked it up right now, June 5th, 1997. So he was drafted third overall as a 20-year-old. And then he went on. Yeah. Then he went on to be like the week one starter for the Jets. So when they talk about, like, it's almost like, you know, they look at JJ McCarthy, they see the future and all that stuff. Then they turn and look at Sam Darnold like, yeah, we don't want to do that. Like, and I mean, I know Sam Darnold's like probably their best chance to compete in 2024 realistically. Mm-hmm. But I mean, how much faith do you have with Sam Darnold that he can get rid of those ghosts he's been seeing since he was back in New York and be this a formidable, let's put it this way. Can he be 1999 Jeff George?
I don't think anyone can be. but I do think that there is something there. I think you take a look at how he played in his like 50 to 100 dropbacks or whatever he had in San Francisco. You take a look at how he played in the final six games of the season that he had against Carolina. And I think it's easy to take a look at like the EPA per play and see how tremendous it was over those 2 years. He didn't play nearly as well as those statistical indicators would suggest, right? His success rate was fairly low. A lot of it was built off of, you know, these boom bust plays where like receivers are generating a lot of yards after the catch. But you know, he was playing a lot better than he'd ever did in New York. And, you know, obviously we know that the New York environment wasn't remarkable or wonderful. It almost never is for developing quarterbacks. But, you know, you take a look at that. You take a look at what the Vikings have, their supporting cast, the fact that it's probably one of the better supporting casts in the league to support an incoming quarterback, whether it's a new one like JJ McCarthy or a veteran like Sam Darnold. And you think, hey, there might be something here. Like, we might not hit, you know, those high level statistical production marks that we saw in Carolina, just because those were such weird outliers and such a unique circumstance. Like Christian McCaffrey wasn't even there in Carolina, right? They had just traded him away. And so, you know, you've got Donta Foreman and Chuba Hubbard just doing stuff, I guess, stuff that they would never do again. You say, hey, we're probably not going to hit those. If we did, obviously, that'd be fantastic. We're probably not going to hit those. But the things that we liked, you know, the fact that he was making decisions a little bit faster, the fact that he was responding to pressure actually genuinely quite well, you know, in those situations, the fact that, you know, when his coach asked him to do something, he was willing to do it, even if it was outside of his comfort zone or not part of an offense that he previously had experience in. He would just do it, right? And he would execute it fairly well, which is the reason, you know, that San Francisco is willing to play him at all, because that's like the whole element, right, to being a San Francisco quarterback, is that you have to do what Kyle Shanahan wants, right? And so all of those traits probably appealed to the Vikings for them to be able to say, hey, we've got a pretty good offensive line, we've got a really good receiving core, we might be able to make something out of this. Now, I don't think that, you know, unless it's a very optimistic scenario, I don't think that they're going to make the playoffs with Sam Darnold, but I think that they'll be competitive. And the Vikings, you know, I know from like an analytics perspective, or even from a lot of fans' perspective, that like getting a 9-8 record and missing the playoffs is not a success. Like that, the worst possible outcome actually for a lot of people. And I totally sympathize with that. But the Vikings want to establish like a culture of, you know, winning and a high standard of success. Like, you know, if that was something that they were willing to entertain, they probably would have just stuck with Josh Dobbs, right? And it isn't, right? They wanted to keep on finding solutions to problems, finding ways to win. And that actually is probably a reason that they were able to retain Justin Jefferson, right? And so we can talk a lot about, well, maybe they should strategically, you know, put in a little bit less effort here or make a suboptimal decision here because it's going to improve their draft odds. And it's like, well, I don't know how you can retain a guy like Justin Jefferson if you're the kind of organization that's willing to throw stuff away. And you've got a whistleblower in the building. You don't want Brian Flores to find out you're tanking at all.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So they definitely want to establish a culture of winning. And I think that having Sam Darnold there shows a commitment to not just throwing a rookie out there because he's a rookie, right? Making sure that you've got a baseline level of performance. And if that defense improves more than I think it will, then you do have a shot at the playoffs. And so that, I think, is kind of where they're at, is that, hey, Sam Darnold's got a pretty good arm. He's definitely willing to take chances. We've got a receiving core that gives quarterbacks, you know, their faith for having taken that chance, you know, pays them back for that. And, you know, we've got the possibility of a defense that is going to create a lot of turnovers, complicate things for all of these new quarterbacks that they're going to play this year. You know, then you kind of see where they're going. Obviously, Darnold has to take care of the ball a lot better than he's had over the course of his career. But I think that if you've got the right coaching in there, if you can kind of keep him on track, then, you know, you've got a formula for success while McCarthy continues to build and develop.
I looked up Jeff George's stats just for fun here while you were talking as well. From 1999, he was 32 years old, played in 12 games, 10 starts, 8-2 record, 23 touchdowns, 12 interceptions, 58% completion rate. And he
for 99, that's pretty good.
Yeah. And here's the other thing, 45.9% success rate. So, I mean,
hey,
I don't know. I would take that from Sam Darnold, wouldn't you?
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, that interception total in a modern context is a little high for me. The completion percentage is a touch low,
yeah.
But for the most part, that's pretty good. I would take a 99 Jeff Jor season.
That is, I mean, that would be one heck of a season if Sam Darnold just undertakered the Vikings, the playoffs, yeah. Just out of the blue.
Yeah.
And then things really get interesting next year. But we can deal with
good problem to have for sure. But yeah, definitely a problem to solve.
Exactly. Well, that's something that's going to play out during training camp. And we'll get to more of those kind of storylines in just a little second here. But I think a lot of people also have their eyes on what happens before training camp because of the recent events. Kyrie Jackson, as you mentioned, died in a car crash in July 6th, where alcohol was suspected to be involved, according to Maryland police. 6 days later, Jordan Addison's arrested for DUI on July 12th. It's still really murky here. It sounds like it was more marijuana related than alcohol related, but still stopping in the middle of a freeway seems like a bad idea. To most people, I guess, you know, there's a lot of people that are saying they want to hear certain things when Kevin O'Connell addresses the media on Monday. How do the Vikings deal with Jordan Addison, and how do they kind of move on from having a teammate, you know, work with them during the offseason and not being there as they start training camp?
Yeah, it's pretty tough. And unfortunately, the Vikings have had some experience with that. Obviously, Jeff Gladney wasn't on the team when he passed away. He was a Kansas City Chief, but a lot of the players grew close to him. They also have experience with Tony Sperano. And then the team, you know, going back has a lot more experience with that kind of thing, you know, going all the way back to Corey Stringer, right? It is, you know, obviously a very difficult situation to attempt to address, but it's also one that will probably tell us a lot about, you know, Kevin O'Connell as a leader, both internally in the locker room and then externally to us as he talks to media members. But yeah, I mean, it's got to be one where he takes like a harsh and kind of firm stance on Jordan Addison, right? In the context of what's happening with Kyrie Jackson or what happened to Kyrie Jackson. And also, he's probably not going to want to hamstring the team too much by announcing a punishment that the team has come up with that the NFL hasn't yet, because, you know, teams can always punish players more than the NFL does. They can add punishments on top of that. That's like part of the agreement. And I don't know that they want to hamstring the team like that. I think that they want the NFL to make a decision sooner rather than later. And if the NFL doesn't make a decision until like next year, so be it. And I think that that's going to look bad for a little bit. The team doesn't suspend him at all and the NFL waits on that kind of thing. But I think that he's going to have to come up with a reason that, you know, that you would do that, right? That you would wait on the NFL, that you would play this guy through 17 games. You know, despite kind of like all of that's happening, because, you know, it's one thing if a player does this with a different substance after the Kyrie Jackson thing, that's already pretty bad. But the fact that this is the second moving violation right before camp, in a car involving Jordan Addison, I guess maybe not a moving violation, the car wasn't moving, but, you know,
right. Yeah.
You know, that adds to it, right? Like, it's like you've already made this kind of mistake before. And, you know, this time the dog thing, that's not going to fly, right? That just doesn't work. So there's going to have to be, you know, whatever you want to call it, like a come to Jesus moment for Jordan Addison, that the Vikings are going to have to sit down, and probably Kevin O'Connell specifically, but like the Vikings are going to have to sit down and talk to him about that kind of behavior, right? I've never been in that situation where I like wake up in my car on the highway. I can't imagine many people have been in that situation. And this is not to excuse Addison or tell people that they have to have more sympathy for him. But I have to imagine that being woken up by the cops while you're asleep on the freeway has to be an extraordinarily awful experience, right? I mean, the you know, the guilt and the surprise and the shock and all of that is probably a big part of it. He's going to have to fight through that on his own, right? Or, I mean, with teammates maybe, but like he's going to have to fight through that in order to reestablish his confidence on the field, but then also understand, you know, that while he can be a confident player off the field, he can wear, you know, flashy suits and, you know, who cares about that? Have multiple cars. I mean, this is, you know, this is a white Rolls Royce. It's a different car than the Lamborghini, right? Have a bunch of different cars, but, you know, still act responsibly as like a member of society that's like fulfilling his obligations. He can do all of those things and embrace his personality. But he has to be kind of much more aware. And like, I don't know why he fell asleep. You know, as Ben Gessling reported on KFAN, there was some suspicion that this might actually be marijuana related as opposed to alcohol related, and that maybe he had an edible potentially, and that the edible kicked in maybe sooner than he had imagined. I know that there are definitely people who have an edible before they get on the plane, and it seems like he was on his way to LAX airport, right? So that might have been the situation, but that's still like very stupid, right? Like I'm not excusing it, but I'm just kind of curious about how it came about and kind of what the thought process behind the decision was, because that is probably going to better define how, maybe not how careless he's being, regardless it is careless, but like what it, like his thought process is going to tell us a lot more about his character as it relates to this situation than anything else. And that's something that probably only the Vikings will ever know.
And I know Darren Wolfson reported something about, you know, a suspension probably coming down from either the team or the NFL, but also with the messy nature of the case, I could see this dragging out until next year. I could see Jordan Addison getting all the first team. I mean, they're not going to sit there and play him. It's not like, you know, I don't think they've, I don't remember an NFL coach doing this, but I don't think they're like going to throw Jordan Addison out there and make him play every snap of a preseason game, you know, to kind of teach him a lesson.
Like punish him. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of more of a high school punishment when you think about it. But I mean, we've seen DUI cases happen during the summer, and then the NFL goes, well, we don't have all the information. They wait until an actual, you know, ruling or verdict or whatever you want to call it is handed down. I think the Vikings are just very, what's the word? I mean, they're upset because of the image it portrays, I guess, with the death happening 6 days before and then Addison jumping in the car. It's really just a PR nightmare for the team. And it's something that Mike Zimmer controlled very well during his time with the Vikings. But Kevin O'Connell has kind of let that slip a little bit, not with the entire team, because we haven't seen it all over the place.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50. In order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Place, but you know, it's almost like there have been some people who claim maybe Kevin O'Connell needs to be harder with the team. And I mean, I don't know. I don't know if you make Jordan Addison an example. I don't know if you wait until all the facts are out. It just really was a bad decision. I think everybody can agree on that.
Yeah. And different players will respond to different leadership tactics in completely different ways from different people. Like if Kevin O'Connell starts acting like Mike Zimmer, that's just not going to play well in the locker room. Like regardless of like how important it is to you know, set a big example. Like, the way that he has to be tough or strict on people is just going to have to look different. Otherwise, it's not going to be authentic. And that's the only way that you can get an organization kind of in line with your values, is to be authentic. And so however he approaches it, whether it's to be strict or, you know, relatively a little bit more lenient or more forgiving, maybe is a better way to put it, it's going to have to come from a place, you know, of genuineness. And so, you know, who he is as a coach is going to be a big part of this. Like, I know that, like, a lot of Vikings coaches early on in their coaching career have faced, like, just a random tremendous test, right? Like, Mike Zimmer had to deal with the Adrian Peterson thing, like, right away. Like, you know, it kind of sucks, but, like, that is the job, right? That, you know, a lot of times people think about coaching in terms of, like, hey, you know, I've got these great, you know, X's and O's. I work hard. I go into the film room. I've got, like, unique tactical approaches to this. I can solve this problem here. And it's like, great, you can be an offensive coordinator. But we're also asking for, like, a leader, right? We're asking someone to guide the team and set the tone and create an organization that is aligned towards winning. And that's a lot more than, you know, tactical ingenuity, right? And so that is the job. And how he approaches that is going to tell us a lot about him.
The other side to this, of course, if we go back 6 days earlier, I mean, we've kind of alluded to it a little bit. The Kyree Jackson thing, it sucks. It's brutal. It's, you know, when I got the news, it was kind of a punch in the gut. But in the NFL, you got to move on and you got to look in other scenario or other, you know, ways to fill that role, because I think Kyree Jackson was going to have a big role on this team as a fourth round pick that had that size that Brian Flores liked. They want to move Byron Murphy Jr. into the slot, and Jackson was going to play on the outside. Now that we look at this depth chart and can kind of, you know, look ahead a little bit, you know, do you think there's an incumbent on this roster, like a Caleb Evans, a Mekhi Blackman, somebody like that, that could step up and take one of those roles? Or is this a position that's going to belong to the veterans like Shaquille Griffin? Maybe they sign another guy. There's probably another corner I'm forgetting right now. Like, how do they function at cornerback after this news?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they signed a guy. There's a bunch of veterans out there on the market. You know, people like Stephon Gilmore, Xavien Howard, if he's healthy, you know, that kind of stuff, right? I think that they probably signed a guy. I don't know if it's going to be, you know, a name like Gilmore or Howard. It might be, you know, a back of the bench kind of guy. But I do think that there's going to be an opportunity for another corner to make a name for themselves. Yeah, I think that they're probably going to lean a little bit on the veterans. Shaq Griffin is not someone I'm overly enthused about. His history of play over the last 2-3 years has actually not been that good. He's not played anything like the Pro Bowl version of himself back in, I think it was 2019. It's been a while. And I don't think that it's super recoverable, the player that he was. But for that, in order for that to be resolved, you would need someone like an Caleb Evans to step up, who had a ton of opportunity over the past year, 2 years, I think, to you know, demonstrate his level of play. And we know that cornerbacks can sometimes take a long time to get online, right? I mean, especially, you know, from the Zimmer era, having come from that, seeing what Trey Waynes did, seeing how long it took for Mackenzie Alexander to be a really reasonable slot corner. Obviously, Xavier Rhodes is the ultimate example of this, where after the first 2 years, it felt like he was just a tremendous bust. And then that third year comes and he's like a Pro Bowl, maybe all pro type player. We've seen a lot of cornerbacks come through where it took a while before they were pretty good. And Caleb Evans is about at that 3-year mark where you kind of, like, if he takes the next step, it would be in line with that history. And it'd be nice because, again, I don't super trust Griffin. And he's another outside guy, so that would push Byron Murphy in the inside. Blackman, obviously, as a slot guy, would keep Murphy in the outside unless they're not super worried about the size matchup problems on the outside, which I would be. But, you know, maybe Andrew Booth takes a step forward. Like, we kind of dismiss him a lot. I think fairly so, because he's had a lot of injuries. When he's gotten on the field, it hasn't been all that good. Evans has more consistently outplayed him, but he's had some moments where he's flashed good play. And if we're going to pick, you know, a third-year breakout cornerback, why shouldn't it be the second rounder instead of the fourth rounder? So, you know, there are options here, but they're all kind of dart throws, right? They're all kind of flyers. And, you know, if you're going to take these shots, right, if you're going to take these, like, high-risk, high-reward type maybe not high risk, but like low percentage chances of producing a really high level starter, it would have been nice to have more quivers in the arrow, right? Somebody like a Kyree Jackson. And having, you know, that level of talent available, having that level of enthusiasm for football available, that, you know, would have been a tremendous asset to the Vikings. And unfortunately, obviously, they don't have access to that anymore. So, you know, what are they going to do? I mean, they're going to have to tough it out, first of all. But second, they're probably going to add a player. The player they're going to add is probably not going to start. And they'll hold a competition between, you know, Griffin, who right now seems to be, you know, the leader in the clubhouse for that competition, Evans and Booth. And then from there, you know, they'll kind of figure out what the best combination is when they do have a nickel corner on the field. And mind you, they may not always have a nickel corner on the field because Josh Metellus is the fifth defensive back. And so, you know, having a nickel corner means being in dime. They were in dime a lot, right? But, you know, not as much as a lot of teams are in nickel. And so it might not be that important that we figure out who the starting three are, because it might just be that we should care more about the starting two. So we'll see.
Yeah, it's almost like Josh Metellus is, you know, baseball added the utility player position to the All-Star team a couple or yeah. Like, I think they have a gold glove for utility guys right now. That's basically Josh Metellus, where he can play corner, he can play safety, he can play wherever you want him to play. But I mean, thinking of Evan specifically, you make up a good point that, you know, with young corners, progress isn't always linear. Like, I remember Evan's rookie year, you know, there were times where he made some pretty good stops, you know, with some tackling, especially in the run game. And then at the end of last year, he got benched like three times because he just couldn't tackle. And that's what Brian Flores needs. You know, a player like Evans, you know, maybe it did just take an offseason for him to reset. And remember, I think he had what, 2-3 concussions his first year? And then he came back and he's like, he's like, hey, I, you know, we found a way for me to tackle without putting myself at risk. Like, did that do anything? Like, it's a really weird situation with him.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. I mean, he got injured a fair amount. We talk about Andrew Booth's injuries because that was the knock on him coming in, right? That he had a history of injuries going all the way back to like middle school. And so when he gets injured, we bring up kind of like the, he's kind of always been hurt.
You know, it's never a good sign either when your draft pick says, well, I've been injured since high school. What? Excuse me?
Yeah, right. The first time I've been healthy since middle school, I think is what he said. And you're like, you say that like it's a positive and we're all tremendously concerned.
Yeah.
but yeah, Evans did suffer a number of injuries over the past couple of years, right? So those could all play a role. I think a lot of people view injury recovery as purely physical, right? And that is the primary obstacle to getting back on the field, is that physical recovery. But when you play, especially on defense, when you play a position where you have to be the hammer more than the nail, the psychological aspect of injury, you know, is really, really important. And so how he has recovered from that, while also, you know, maybe he has to learn a new tackling technique, which will make it really difficult for him to be an effective tackler as he kind of relearns, you know, how to map his body to those motions. All of that, you know, is going to play a really significant role in whether or not the Vikings can trust him, you know, when he's a boundary corner and they're running to the boundary side on a condensed field, he's going to have to just play big, right? So, yeah, I think that all of those things are, you know, reasonable considerations and a big part of this competition.
Here's another thing that could play in there. And I'll mention this briefly because there's another side of Dallas Turner that we're going to talk about in a little bit, but that pass rush, you know, making the pass rush better. You have Metellus who can play a variety of positions, but now you have Turner, you have Van Ginkle, you have Cashman, you have Grenard. You have a lot of guys that you can move around as chess pieces on that board if you're Brian Flores. That has to make the secondary's job easier, right?
You think, yeah. Yeah, I think it's fair to say that that would make the secondary's job easier. Obviously, hopefully Van Ginkle is going to be ready to play week one. There's some small injury concerns. He hasn't, you know, taken the field yet or anything like that. But having more pass rushers available, right, is going to allow you to keep them fresh, rotate them in, maybe, you know, replace one of your defensive tackles, which is, again, a position of weakness, with a pass rusher in certain downs where you know that there's going to be passing. You don't have to worry about run stopping. And that's going to shorten the timelines, which is how the Vikings were so effective last year for most of the seasons, that they shortened the timelines for quarterbacks. They had to get rid of the ball quickly. And obviously, it's much more difficult to cover a guy for 4 seconds than it is for 2 seconds, right? And I think that, you know, this marriage, right, between coverage and pass rush, you know, where one improves the other, right, is always a critical element to this equation, right? Sometimes, you know, you've got these really high level corners that look pretty bad because they have to cover for 4 or 5 seconds because the pass rush can't get home, or these really mediocre corners that look great because I only have to cover a guy for like 1.5 seconds. Adding pass rush is designed to, you know, help improve that situation. Plus, it'll allow the Vikings to be not so blitz heavy. They were the most blitz heavy team in the league as far back as I can tell in the data. They're the most blitz heavy league team that we've ever seen. You know, it's probably not actually true. We don't have data on 1977. I would imagine the Grits Blitz Falcons were a much more blitz heavy team, as were many of the teams from the 70s. But in a modern context, it's one of the most blitz heavy teams we've ever seen. That's probably not going to continue. And I think that allowing players like, you know, Ivan Pace to develop coverage skills, or allowing Blake Cashman to stay in coverage, or Josh Metellus or Harrison Smith or whoever, allowing those players to stay back in coverage is going to give more to that coverage unit if they can develop the same amount of pressure with fewer blitzing players or fewer pass rushers. And so Dallas Turner is going to be part of it. Jonathan Bernard is going to be part of it. Andrew Van Ginkle is going to be part of it. You know, hopefully, you know, somebody develops, right? You know, either Gabe Murphy, you know, appears on the scene, or Pat Jones has developed, or Andre Carter has developed. And now you've got a fourth pass rusher that it will allow you to rotate these guys in and out more often, or create more confusing situations, or, you know, put in a really like demonic third down package that's going to really harass quarterbacks. I mean, all of those things are going to really help. The one important thing to remember, though, is that when we take a look at coverage impacting, you know, the pass rush impacting the coverage, historically, we found that coverage matters more in that equation, that coverage impacts pass rush more than vice versa. So at some point, the Vikings are just going to have a solution at corner, but it does help to have that pass rush.
Well, I mean, that pass rush could be a little slower if, you know, Dallas Turner holds out from his rookie contract and, you know, JJ McCarthy. There's part of me that doesn't even want to talk about this, but I'm just going to ask it anyway. Is this an issue? Why do you think the contracts haven't gotten done? You know, do you think they get done before Sunday? Because my uncle, who's a very loyal watcher of the show, has been sending me articles basically saying, oh my God, JJ McCarthy's going to have the holdout of the century if he doesn't get signed this week. So, like, should we be worried? What do you think we're thinking here?
I'm not that concerned. You take a look at JJ McCarthy's agent, you take a look at the history of players that he's represented, especially rookies. Some of them have held out, and I think the longest they've held out is 2 days into training camp. And it's all primarily for the same reason. It is to make sure that they get the bonus money up front. And it's one I very strongly sympathize with, right? So you get a signing bonus, you don't get all that money up front. First of all, that's annoying, right? That's the point of a signing bonus, is that you get it now. But second, the Vikings make money on any money that they don't pay out. If you hold funds in escrow, you can earn interest off of those funds, and the interest is yours. And so if you wait to pay an agreed amount of money to somebody, you are legally required to have that money available. And because of the NFLPA and the way that the CBA is set up, they have to put those funds in escrow. And so there's a separate fund just for that kind of guaranteed money. You can earn interest off that. And, you know, McCarthy's agent's like, well, it's his money. He should be the one that earns interest off of it. And he earned it by being a good enough player for the Vikings to select him, you know, early in the draft. So I very much sympathize with it. The Vikings are going to have that money available. And paying that out sooner rather than later is something that McCarthy's team feels very strongly is in his best interest. And I get it. But most of the time, this gets resolved. This specific issue tends to get resolved in the player's favor. We'll see. But it tends to get resolved, you know, early in the process, usually, you know, before camp starts, sometimes on the day of. But even when it doesn't, it's fairly early in the process, like 2 days into camp. So I'm not that concerned. Every time can be the first time something becomes a bigger problem than it has been in the past. But I can only guide my reactions based off of, you know, what I've seen in the past in similar situations. And it's not been that bad.
You know, it's wild, like different era, because I think this was before the picks were all slotted. So it wasn't like you had to negotiate how much money a player would make. Toby Gerhardt held out of training camp once. Like that is just wild to me looking back on it. It's just like, the dude was a second round pick, like a second round holdout. That is wild to me, but
good for you, Toby.
Then he came and got his head taken off during training camp on the first day or something like that. And it's wild.
And then they asked him to gain like 30 pounds and ruin the whole thing. You know, yeah.
Oh, man. One of the greats. I also saw Erasmus James and Troy Williamson both held out the year the Vikings took them in the first round. And then, of course, you have Bryant McKinney, who like held out until what was it, November or something? And I think there was like a lawsuit involved or something, like he had something or other. But yeah, I mean, I'm glad we don't have that anymore. And I don't think this goes
into that 2011 was pretty wild. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially, you know, you'd wake up, you see the text alert on your phone. Matthew Stafford got $70 million right out of the, geez, okay. Yeah, that's fun. Let's close with this storyline, because I think this is my most important one. I look at this team and this training camp, and my brain goes back to 2014. When I was going down 14, I was going to Mankato. You were there. Sam Ekstrom was there. Luke Inman was there. I was too afraid to go in the press room because I felt like I didn't belong. So I sat in my Chevy Cavalier with no AC and like a door that opened up when I turned. And like, yeah, it was bad. But, you know, you look back, Mike Zimmer taking over, Teddy Bridgewater, he was getting integrated. You had new faces on both sides of the ball. And when I look at this team right now, I think this is the first time since Kevin O'Connell has been hired that this feels like the team that he wants. Like, obviously, when he takes the job, he hangs on to kind of the Zimmer guys. He makes a couple of runs with them. It doesn't really work out. But now he's got his quarterback. He's got his hand-picked stopgap at quarterback. You have guys all over the roster who weren't on this team 2 years ago. You know, what do the Vikings need to do to make this a successful training camp and build a foundation that Kevin O'Connell is trying to build?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it's his guys with the culture that he is attempting to build. And I think a successful training camp is one where, I mean, we're not going to know how the team is going to do, right? We're not going to know, no matter what, you know, if that defense is actually rock solid or continues to be a concern. But I think a successful training camp is one where a lot of these questions are fairly definitively answered, right? So if a Caleb Evans takes the job from Shaq Griffin, there's got to be no doubt about that. A successful training camp is one where Sam Darnold is the unquestioned starter at quarterback. A successful training camp is one where everyone kind of knows what the plan is without TJ Hawkinson, whether that's to have Josh Oliver run more routes or Robert Tonyan, you know, play a role in the offense this year. I say this year like he was on the team last year, but like, you know, play a role in the offense, right? Yeah. Or if they're going to go three wide a lot more often and not have, you know, a tight end, you know, enter into passing routes all that often. Josh Oliver is just another block, you know, whatever it is, there has to be an answer, right? It has to be definitive and they have to be comfortable with it. They can't go into week one wondering what their matchup is going to be, wondering, you know, is a Caleb Evans going to hold up? You know, should we consider benching him halfway into the game to put, you know, Blackman out there or whatever and have Byron Murphy playing the outside? They can't be in that spot. They have to answer a lot of these questions really definitively, and they have to be comfortable with those answers. So that's what a successful training camp is one where they say, no, we've got Blake Brandel at left guard and he's starting and we're really happy with that, actually, you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, and that's true for a lot of teams, but, you know, teams sometimes are in a spot where you're a lot more comfortable with them openly exploring these questions heading into the season because you don't really expect much. The Vikings, I think a lot of people don't expect much. Internally, they seem to expect a lot. I'm not with them on that, but if they want to fulfill those expectations, they have to be very definitive in their approach and they have to be at a spot where they say, yeah, we love that Blake Cashman's our linebacker and he's going to be our linebacker for the next 3-4 years. Ivan Pace is going to be next to him. That's it. Brian Asma, really nice that he's here. Not a starter. So, you know, those kinds of things need to be, you know, resolved in a very definitive fashion for them to be comfortable with them saying, we've got the playoffs in mind, which is what they say. It's I need to see it to believe it. But that's what they say. And they need to be in a spot where they can be comfortable saying it.
I feel like, you know, a successful training camp would be a quiet training camp because when you have a lot of noise, kind of like the Vikings have going on coming into training camp, it can linger throughout the season. Look back to last year. You had the Kirk contract thing hanging over every, I mean, that hung over the entire season, but you know, TJ Hawkinson, he has the holdout with the back injury and ear infection and all that stuff. Justin Jefferson's contract was looming over it. You know, you get to the season and the Vikings look sloppy the first five games and then basically knocks them out of the playoffs before the year even begins. 2018, you have Kirk Cousins in there, but the Zimmer John DeFilippo feud kind of carried over into the year. You also had Tony Sperano, or no. Tony Sperano died in 2016. Am I right?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
I was thinking it was 2018, but that was 20. So I was getting into 2016 anyway, because that was like Tony Sperano dies. Wow. Teddy gets hurt. All this other stuff. Excuse me.
No. Tony Sperano died in 20. It was 2018. Yeah.
Oh, 2018. So yeah, that was another thing that kind of, you know, sabotage that 2018 season when they had a Super Bowl team. 2016 just kind of went over that. Like, I cannot think of a year where the Vikings were successful and I remember that training camp. Like, 2009's maybe an exception with Brett Favre coming in. But like, and maybe you go back to 1998 with Randy Moss, but like, other than that, like, when the Vikings have just had a ho-hum training camp, they've usually turned out to be a somewhat successful team. So I think the Vikings' number one goal of training camp should be turn the volume down. Like, get in there, get in the lab, as Kwesi likes to say, and refine their things. Like you said, they have a lot of screws to tighten before they get into that week one matchup with the Giants. And if they're able to do that, if they're able to kind of lay low, get everything together, I think they can be a good team. I don't think they can be a, like, they could make the playoffs maybe, but I'm not expecting a Super Bowl team. Just right, something that would be a step forward, I think, should be the goal for this season as a whole. And I think it starts with a quiet training camp.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, that makes a ton of sense. Like, what's really funny is that the most successful season recently, 2017, was a quiet training camp. But then after week one, it was all chaos. Like, that's the one where you're like, hey, no, hold on.
wait. It's the point in Madden where you restart the franchise, right? Like, right? Oh, Sam Bradford's out for the year. Screw this. Let's get out of here.
But yeah, you know, having a quiet training camp, I think, would be a refreshing change given the history of this franchise.
Let's wrap things up here. You got the Wide Left Substack. Nothing going on in the world of politics right now. So, I mean, right. not too much there. What's going on at Wide Left?
So actually, I don't have that many political pieces up there. Okay. Despite
kind my of bad,
the,
my bad.
The environment. No. I mean, it's funny because I've been thinking about writing one. I'm just like, I don't know, you know. But it is an area that it will cover at Wide Left Football. I've got a couple of pieces up that are related to politics, but it is, you know, primarily a football blog, and so I've got pieces about, you know, whether Jared Goff is any good, that got published today. You know, is Jordan Love as good as people say? That got published, you know, 2 weeks ago. We've got one from Luke Braun about kicking mechanics and the kicking competition. So it's a place where you can find, like, just like random deep bits of information about, like, does quarterback clutchness exist? What is JJ McCarthy's whole deal? What's his vibe? We got like a really long piece on just that question, right? Sometimes I'm just annoyed about something. So I wrote a whole piece about Aaron Rodgers and how much he annoys me, you know? So, you know, if that's your vibe, you know, head over to wideleft.football. I've got a ton of pieces there. The political pieces can range from, you know, the history of gun violence in the United States to, you know, what's happening in Gaza and Palestinian athletes as we approach the Olympic Games, you know, Caitlin Clark and how that interacts with kind of the culture of basketball and the culture at large. So a lot of different things that we talk about over at Wide Left, but a lot of it is just football stuff. So head over there if any of that interests.
And where can people follow you on social media these days?
Yeah, I do have a lot of social accounts, but I don't really use them aside from Twitter. So that one's just @ArifHassanNFL. Occasionally I'll post to Threads if I've got a big piece or Blue Sky. I think I'm @Arif on Blue Sky, which is nice that I was able to get that one early. @ArifHassan on Threads. I'm sure I have a Mastodon account somewhere. I don't know, man. This stuff is
it's messy now. It used to be just Twitter and X, and now you have Blue Sky, Mastodon. There's probably one called Crank somewhere. I don't know. Crank.net. Right? Don't go there. Actually, I have no idea what it is. I don't want anybody to get fired on the job and be like, they told me on this podcast. No. You can follow me as well on X and Instagram. I'm @TheRealChrisShad. Going to be ramping up the Instagram content a little bit here as we approach the season. But Arif, thank you for coming on the show today. It's all the time we have, though. We do this every Monday right here with a late week episode right here on the Viking Age YouTube channel. We're in podcast form on Apple and Spotify the very next day. And however you consume us, make sure you rate, comment, like, and subscribe so you never miss a new episode and we can spread the word to the masses. For Arif Hassan, I am Chris Shad. This has been the Viking Age Podcast.
Hey, y'all. Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.